Welcome to Attention Talk Radio, the show centered around paying attention to attention, with your host, Attention Coach Jeff Copper.
Welcome, everybody, to this edition of Attention Talk Radio. I'm your host, Attention Coach Jeff Copper. Today is Wednesday, March the 21st at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time in the year 2012. Our topic tonight, Executive Function in Adults with ADHD, a New Construct. With us in our virtual studios, Dr. Russell A. Barkley. Before we get into the show, a few announcements. For those on the East Coast, the CHAD is having a regional conference Saturday, May the 19th in Baltimore, Maryland. For more information, that go to chadd.org. Reminder to our listeners, check out our Facebook page at facebook.com/attentiontalkradio. If you're a Facebook person, you can like the page, but if you're not a Facebook patient, it's a good place to go where you can access our archive shows, you can listen to the show live, and you can see a list of upcoming shows. If you're not the type of person who likes to go out onto the internet to find out what's going on, just click on our live newsletter tab on the left-hand side of the page, sign up for our newsletter, and we'll send you a list of upcoming shows twice a month. Also, it's not too early to start planning for the CHAD National Conference, which is going to be in San Francisco this year on November the 8th through the 12th. For more information on that, go to chadd.org. I believe that's all the announcements, so let's get into the show. Again, the topic tonight is executive function in adults with ADHD, a new construct. And with us tonight is Dr. Russell Barkley. He is world-renowned authority on attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, having spent his entire professional career studying ADHD, its diagnosis, assessment, and management. He's received numerous citations for excellence in his research and opinions on ADHD and is highly esteemed by professionals in the field. Dr. Barkley has written extensively on various treatments and various topics with regard to ADHD. He received his PhD in 1977 in clinical psychology at Bowling Green State University in Ohio, receiving Distinguished Dissertation Award for his research on the effects of medication on children with ADHD. He's authored numerous books, numerous chapters, and numerous papers. All I suggest that you do for a complete list, and you could probably spend about 2 hours going through the rest of his biography, is go to russellbarkley.org. Now, due to Dr. Barkley's schedule, this show had to be pre-taped, so we're going to run it in its entirety right now. So just sit back, and we hope you enjoy the show.
Welcome, everybody. Tonight, we have Dr. Russell Barkley in our virtual studio, and our topic is Executive Functioning in Adults with ADHD, a New Construct. Dr. Barkley, at the 2010 CHAD conference, did a presentation entitled The Nature of Executive Function in ADHD, Implications and Assessment for Management. And then at the 2011 CHAD conference, he did a presentation titled Assessment and Treatment of Executive Function Deficits in Adults with ADHD. Both presentations, he spoke about the ambiguity and the ambiguous nature of the term executive function and the numerous components as currently presented in neuropsychological literature. As he walked us through the history of the term, which is one of the most frequently used terms, as I understand it, in neuropsychology, it was clear that there was no consensus definition of executive function. And with no consensus or precise or operational definition, it was really kind of anything goes, a free-for-all. He went on to point out that the way we assess and treat things are really based off the definition. And if we really have no definition, then anything goes. And further, if we're defining the wrong thing, then we're likely dealing with the wrong treatments and assessments. And so, daring to go where nobody had gone before, Dr. Barkley, as I understood, took on the task of trying to define this construct and actually bring some specificity to the definition and the idea to define executive function in a way that he could use, as I think his term was, like a Swiss Army knife, to cut through the ambiguity and clearly define what is considered executive function and what's not. And with the definition in hand, he shared his theories on executive function and its role in the nature of ADHD, the nature of executive neuropsychological function in multi-level meta-construct, its contribution to self-regulation across time to support individuals' long-term welfare, and the implications on assessment and treatment. And as I listened to both presentations as I was there and studied the both presentations subsequently, I overlaid my experience coaching those with ADHD, and so much of what he presented seemed to clearly explain the nature of ADHD and explain to an extent some of the results I had been observing in coaching. And so today's show, the purpose of it is I wanted to invite Dr. Brockley on and really kind of give him a stage upon which to share these new constructs with myself and, you know, all the other listeners out there who were diagnosed with ADHD, to kind of simplify this so we can understand and evaluate this to see what kind of makes sense. And so, Dr. Brockley, I'd like to welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Jeff. I really appreciate the invitation, and especially to talk about this subject, which is, as you know, very near and dear to my heart at this time, given that I have a new theoretical book that's about to come out later this spring on this very topic. So thanks so much for having me on.
This is kind of fascinating to me, because as I listen to this stuff, I mean, this is really a new way of attacking, or attacking is probably not the right word, of dealing with ADHD, and can really, if it's spot on, really change the way we go about stuff. Do you sense that, or is it really just a small deviation?
Well, no, I think it's a major, if not a tectonic shift in the plates here of how we think about executive functioning and, by implication, how we think about ADHD. You see, as you pointed out, for years, we've had a situation where the term executive functioning, which is very fashionable and glitzy right now, has been used a great deal, but there's no consensus definition of it. There's more than 40 to 50 definitions in the literature, as I mentioned in my book, and also there's more than 33 different mental abilities that have been said to be under this tent or umbrella of the term executive functioning, and that just can't be the case. When you get that sloppy and anything goes, then we're not going to make major advances in understanding either the executive functions of the brain or people who have disorders of executive functioning, like those with ADHD or other disorders. So, no, I think it's very important. I've actually spent the last 17 years of my career trying to develop and further amend this theory of ADHD and executive functioning. So it's a pleasure to be able to talk about it.
And one of the things I always say is what's obvious is a function of what you're paying attention to, and by shifting the way we look at this can revolutionize some things. And in listening to your last CHAD conference, I was in the back room with Dr. Charles Parker, who we had on earlier in November for two shows just before, talking about meds and stuff. But the two of us were just sitting there with awe, because in one sense we're saying we could see how this could revolutionize things. So I guess let's jump into it, because we got a lot of fish to fry, as you say, with a short period of time. Can you talk about the definition of executive function that you came up with and how you got there?
Yes, I can. Well, first of all, I began with executive functioning is self-regulation. And the reason I started there is that in a survey of major experts in neuropsychology who work in this field, that was the number one construct they thought that was most likely to fit under the term executive functioning. And then they want to name and named other things like working memory and inhibition and planning. But self-regulation appeared to be a central feature of this. So I started with that because we have a very clear definition in psychology of self-control, of what self-regulation is. And so I wanted to start with that as the basic template and build upon it. So if I might, let me just quickly go through what self-regulation is defined as, because we can then back into executive functioning. Is that okay?
Yep.
Okay, well, self-regulation is comprised of three things, three steps. First, we direct some action back at ourself, not at the world around us immediately, but at us. The second thing is that we're doing this in order to change our behavior from what it otherwise would have been had we just gone on and behaved automatically in that situation. So we're directing an action at ourselves in order to change ourselves. Now, why would we want to modify our own behavior? Because we're doing this in order to change the likelihood of a later consequence. So self-regulation is all about changing yourself in order to alter your future. And it may involve actually turning away from the seductions of the moment and denying yourself certain kinds of immediate, smaller gratifications or rewards in order to pursue larger fish to fry, so to speak, larger consequences. Because we know in our lives, especially in social life, later consequences are often much more important, more compelling than immediate consequences. And so we always have an eye out for the future and not just for the moment of what we're doing. And so self-regulation is all about changing your future for the better, for your long-term welfare. So we can take these three steps, an action at the self designed to change what you're doing in order to make your future better, to maximize your gains later on. Now, if that's what self-control is, all I did was make the connection back to executive functioning.
Mm-hmm.
The executive functions are the specific things you do to yourself to change
mm-hmm.
yourself. And there isn't just one thing that humans do to themselves. There are six. And that's where I came up with the metaphor of this Swiss Army knife, that the executive functions are sort of six different mind tools
uh-huh.
that we use, like a Swiss Army knife, in order to manage our behavior so as to pursue our goals and improve our future. And so we can talk about each of the six of these, because I think by looking at each of them, we can begin to get some idea of what people with ADHD are struggling with, because they're not struggling with just one thing, such as self-control. They're struggling with all six of these things. And it really gives, I think, a richer and a broader appreciation for the swath of cognitive problems that people with this disorder struggle with.
I love what you're saying here, and as I had said at the beginning, it was interesting because in listening to this, I started to look at like the coaching model and what I learned. And one of the things that we work with those with ADHD is help them learn to pause.
Yes,
to pause
absolutely.
And stop kind of what they're doing and ask them something as simple as, how is this serving me or whatever. And in that moment that they actually pause, they have the opportunity to make a conscious decision to change, to regulate their actions or self. In a sense, you and I did a show last year talking about the impact of emotion on ADHD, and towards the end of that, we talked about the same thing, to notice those times where you're going to be, where emotion is going to come into play, and either avoid them or learn how to down-regulate them. And again, what I like about this model is it fits. One of the things that, as a coach, we try to practically teach those that we work with how to notice and how to pause to change the self-directed action.
Absolutely. Well, you've hit upon the first of the six executive functions, which is self-restraint, which is directing inhibition at ourselves. This is conscious. This is effortful. This takes energy to do this. And so this ability to inhibit your actions, to build in a pause, and to give yourself a little time for the other five executive functions to inform what you're about to do. Because if you don't stop, if you don't wait, then the rest of the executive system gets no traction. It has no chance to change you because you've already acted in the situation, and the most you're going to have is a lot of regret
mm-hmm.
for what you did impulsively. So we can begin with that then. The first of these executive functions is this ability to consciously inhibit your automatic reactions to the environment around you. Now, it'll help to think about the brain as a two-level system. There's an
mm-hmm.
automatic level called System 1 by some people, or pre-executive in my model. And then there's level 2, which people call system 2 or the executive system. This is the deliberate system. This one
mm-hmm.
takes energy. It takes time. It's got a limited pool of resources that it can use. But this is the one that where the executive functions are located. So what you want to do is you want to be able to inhibit this automatic level of the brain that we go about our day, because a lot of what we do is rather automatic anyway,
yep.
and be able to engage that executive system. And you can't do that if you don't stop the automatic system. And that's where your comment about building in a pause, showing some self-restraint, you know, biting your tongue, sitting on your hands, whatever
yep.
you have to do to just get yourself a few seconds so that your executive system can gear up and be able to guide you into what would be more appropriate to do.
Absolutely.
Now,
I tell you what, Doctor, can I stop you here because I need to run to a commercial break real quick?
Oh, it's a good break point.
Before we do that, real quickly, you have a book that's coming out in March. It's executive. I think they just changed the name, so it's Executive Function. What it is, or what's the title?
The publisher changed the title. It's now going to be called Executive Functions: What They Are, How They Work, and Why They Evolved. And it's really a detailed, sort of more of a scholarly, theoretical book on what we're talking about today.
In much more detail. So I tell you what, let's run to a break, and we'll come back, and we'll pick up where we left off on this. So with that, we'll be right back.
You're listening to Attention Talk Radio. We'll return in a moment. Your life, your world, your choice. This is Attention Talk Radio.
Make every moment count with Time Timer, a sensitive solution for ADHD time management. It shows how much time is left using a bright red disc that gets smaller as time passes. To place an order for a Time Timer, all you have to remember is timetimer.com.
Experience the difference with a top-notch ADHD coach. Find one at the ADD Coach Academy, the only comprehensive ADHD coach training program accredited by the International Coach Federation. Go to addca.com and click on Find a Coach.
Do you have something those with ADHD need? Advertise on Attention Talk Radio. We are a narrowcast, internet-based radio show targeting those with or impacted by ADHD. To learn more about advertising opportunities, email attention at attentiontalkradio.com.
And now, back to Attention Talk Radio.
Welcome back, everybody. I have Dr. Russell Barkley in our virtual studio. Before the break, we were talking about executive functioning, defining and using self-regulation as a means to kind of determine what is executive function and what is not. And Dr. Barkley is describing the three-step process in self-regulation. And we started talking about one of the first levels of development, and we kind of walked our way into the self-regulation as the automatic level, and then there's the executive function level. And we talked about the need to pause sometimes to get out of the automatic side so the executive functioning can kind of take over and maybe choose a different behavior to change the future. With that being said, Doctor, can we just jump back where you are and let's just keep building on this?
Yeah, I'm glad to. Thanks, Jeff. We talked about there being six executive functions, which are six ways that people try to change their behavior in order to improve their future. And this self-change for the future is what executive functioning is all about. Now, we talked about the first one, which is inhibition, self-restraint. But that actually is part of two others. And the three of these sort of form a unity. They're the first three to develop. They develop simultaneously, we believe. And so it pays to think of them as the core executive functions. Now, inhibition is the first one. The second one is self-awareness, the mind's mirror, so to speak, the ability to direct your attention on yourself and what you're doing. Obviously, you can't inhibit your automatic level of responding to the world if you're not monitoring that.
Yep.
And that's where self-awareness comes in. But self-awareness doesn't do you any good if you can't stop the automatic level. So you see how the two of those go together, and neither makes sense without the other.
Yep.
So we've got self-restraint or inhibition. We've got self-awareness, which is basically attending to yourself.
Yep.
And then the third one that goes with these two grows out of that self-awareness, and it's the ability to engage in visual imagery specifically and sensing to yourself more generally. We literally, as people, re-see to ourselves. We have a past, and we can activate images of that past in order to guide us, and we call that hindsight. The ability to look back, and literally it is looking back. You're recalling images of prior situations that are relevant to this particular moment that you're in, and you're going to use those earlier relevant moments to guide you. It's kind of like a GPS of the mind is how I think of it. You know how you've got your GPS in your car, and it's a visual image of a map of the terrain, and it's showing you where you're going, where you've been, and it kind of gives you a sense of the future that's coming at you. Well, that's exactly what this part of the brain is doing. The visual imagery system of the brain brings up the past, and out of it we pull what's relevant, and we, like a GPS, we create an image of what we hope to do. And we hold that image in mind, and we use it to guide ourselves forward, just like we use a GPS to drive ourselves through foreign territory.
Great
so
analogy.
Those three go together, and they're very, very important executive abilities. And then the other three will build upon them. But these I think of as the foundational executive abilities.
And you said these you believe that these three developed all kind of more or less simultaneously, right?
Yes, I do. They start around 3 months of age, although they're very primitive and rudimentary, but they can be measured. And then they take about a decade or more to begin to reach their maturity. Usually by the early adolescent years, you'll see these things beginning to reach their nearly adult levels of development. And then from then on, the other three are developing, and they'll take a little bit longer to go through it. But I think it helps to keep these in mind, the ability to stop yourself, the ability to be aware of what you're doing, and then the ability to imagine your past, to revisualize that, because out of that past is going to come your sense of what's coming next. So hindsight leads to foresight, and you don't get the foresight if you don't stop and think about your past a little bit and use the images of the past. So those are the first three. Now, shall I talk about the other three?
Well, yeah, before we do, it's interesting because, again, in coaching, if we can working with people, if we can get them to pause for a second, many times we mirror back to them some stuff that they do. So, like, last year when we were talking about emotions, if I'm working with somebody who, you know, they get in these situations, they're emotional, I say, so what I'm hearing is that you get real emotional in those types of situations, and then it snaps and you lose it. Over a period of time, they start to become aware of that situation, and they're looking for it, which enables them to pause and either not get into that situation or know they're going to go into it and have strategies to kind of down-regulate it. Again, I just want to kind of pause. What I love so much about this model is some of the things that we're doing in coaching that works, it just fits kind of what we're trying to do in sync with what you're describing to us. The other thing, in getting into the other threes, is this notion that your brain is developing kind of in a hierarchy, and this is kind of layered these next couple of levels, right?
Yes, they are. They're layered on top of these first three, and so they're going to develop in stages. As we watch children develop, you'll see the first three coming online relatively early, usually by the elementary school years, and then maturing from that point on, and then you're going to see the next one start to get layered on it. So the fourth one that's going to come next is the ability to talk to yourself, self-speech. Mm-hmm. We start directing language back at ourselves. This starts around 3 to 4 years of age, but it doesn't do as much good at that point. But over time, it begins to get traction. What we say to ourselves begins to guide what we do. And then what happens, which is rather amazing, I think, is we begin to make this self-talk private.
Uh-huh.
We're able to develop the ability to just do it in our mind and not do it publicly. And so we use our language to talk to ourselves in order to think, ask questions, recall our past, but more importantly, give ourselves instructions to do. Now, sometimes we do say these things out loud. Even adults, if they're alone in a room, may start to talk out loud when nobody's around. Also, we may, in fact, begin to write down these instructions to ourselves so that they are even more powerful at controlling what we're about to do. We all have do lists and schedules and calendars and sticky notes, and that's simply a way of making external this private speech that you're using to yourself. But whether you do it in your head or you do it on paper, the fact is you're talking to yourself, and you're doing that as a form of self-control. So that's a very powerful fourth tool that is now, I think, scaffolded on top of the other three.
What's really cool about this is in the presentations you talked about Vygotsky's model, and I probably pronounced his name wrong, that you can observe this in children, literally. You can see them just say words that are they're just words, and then after a while they talk and play, and then they're talking in private when they're play, and then that voice kind of moves into their head. And in the coaching world, there's a lot of times where I'm literally working with people and they struggle, they're stuck many times if they're not verbalizing it. And as they start to verbalize it, many times it looks like a conversation, but it's, I mean, they're just thinking out loud and they arrive at the solution. And some I've worked with actually learn things that they don't understand by trying to find somebody to teach it to them, because it's that process of verbalization. So, and what am I seeing? Is this matching up here a little bit? That it's almost like the development hasn't gone
up. An issue, I think, that is very important, and that is to understand that ADHD delays the development of these executive abilities by about 30 to 40% behind the schedule that we see in normal individuals. And so it's not surprising to see young adults with ADHD who are struggling to use this mind's voice, as I call it, because it's delayed. They're back at a stage that's about 30 to 40% earlier in development.
Uh-huh.
So it's not as effective. They're still talking out loud when other people talk in their mind. And even when they are able to talk to themselves, it's not as powerful. It doesn't have as much of a controlling influence as it appears to have in other people. So you're absolutely right. Helping people with ADHD sometimes means having them stop and talk out loud to themselves, not just visualize the past.
Yep.
That's a good thing to do, but also talk about the past. Talk about what you're about to do. Put this into words, because we know that external words are more potent at controlling us than things that we just say in our mind.
And to build on this, we had Dr. Timothy Willens on last week talking about the transition of adolescent to adult, but he was also at the last CHAD conference, and part of his presentation was talking about, I remember the probabilities of those with ADHD, they're more apt to be in more blue-collar type things where they're doing stuff with their hands and dealing with their external world as opposed to internal world, which, again, is just another thing. All of a sudden, it just kind of fits in this model, and like, oh, wow, this makes a lot of sense.
I think it does, especially when we get to the sixth executive function. You're going to see why I think you might see them drifting more into the manual trades, what we think of as the blue-collar trades. But let me just finish up then and get to the fifth one. The fifth executive ability, which, again, is a type of action that you're using with yourself, actually comes out of the other four, and that is the ability to regulate your emotions, to control your emotional state. And you and I did a whole program on this earlier where we talked about ADHD is associated with serious problems with impulsive emotion and with difficulties regulating your emotions to make them more mature, acceptable, and consistent with your goals. And so that's this fifth executive ability, is the ability to quell strong emotion, to be able to soothe yourself, calm yourself down, to be able to reevaluate and reappraise the emotion, are things as important as you seem to feel they are, and then to be able to substitute a better emotion, maybe a more moderate one, or even an alternative emotion in its place. You know, it's like your mother telling you to count to 10 and go to your happy place when you get angry, but she's right. That's exactly what you do. You buy time. You inhibit the strong emotion, you visualize an alternative situation, and that helps to calm yourself down. And then you can start to evaluate more rationally what's going on around you and whether it's worth getting this upset and, you know, spending a lot of social cash, if you will, with other people because you're so angry or you're so frustrated. Emotional self-control is the fifth one.
I have a question here. This is an observation, so I'm probably out to lunch here, but I noticed some people with ADHD, they struggle more with emotions than others, and it's like this fight-or-flight thing. And it's almost sometimes that they just love the adrenaline rush of it, and they kind of go off on it. And it seems to me that adrenaline rush kind of stimulates their brain. Would that make them predisposed to bring more drama in their life because it kind of medicates the brain, or am I, like, off on a tangent?
Well, no. I think there's some merit to the tangent, but I think it helps to understand that, first of all, they're showing a lot more primary emotions that the rest of us feel but inhibit. We don't show it because we know that it's going to come off looking like a drama queen. You know, if your emotional buttons are pushed so quickly and so often, that really annoys other people, and they're going to start to withdraw from you, and they're going to start to view you as being way too dramatic in your emotions. You need to be able to quell these, moderate them, be more reasonable about them, and then develop emotions that are both consistent with what you're trying to do here with your goals and also consistent with sustaining your friendships and your relationships with other people.
Excellent.
So this fifth executive ability is very important because we found that this emotional difficulty predicts a lot of things about ADHD that we didn't understand to begin with, like why are adults with ADHD fired more often than other people from employment? It doesn't have to do with their inattentiveness. It doesn't have to do with their bad time management. That just means they're less productive at work. But if you blow up at people or if you get very emotional very quickly, that's going to cost you in social relationships and in the workplace.
Yep.
So and in your marriage as well.
Yep.
So that's number five. Now, number six, which is the last to mature, but I think one of the more important of these six, and that is because it's related to problem solving, and that is the ability to play in your mind with information. And I refer to it as simply self-directed play, but it begins actually in children's manual play. And when children start out, they learn to take apart their world, and they play with various combinations of the parts of their world. And we see children do this all day long when they're playing, and then they try to imagine new scenarios and new ways of doing things. And eventually, this play goes from being manual to becoming mental. We're actually able to manipulate images and words in our mind in order to look for novel combinations that might help us out of a problem or solve a current situation that we have.
Yep.
So this mental play is founded on external play, and it's very important. In fact, research shows it is critical to adult problem solving that children go through these stages of play, because if they don't, like autistic children, then they wind up being very deficient in problem-solving abilities as adults. So let me just quickly go back over it for our listeners.
Yep.
The six executive abilities are all things we do to ourselves, and they are self-restraint or inhibition, self-awareness, which is attending to ourselves. Then there's visual imagery, which is seeing our past to ourselves at the moment. And then the fourth one is talking to ourselves. And all of those lead to the fifth, which is the ability to manipulate our emotions and to control them more appropriately. And then the last one is the ability to play in our mind with information, which is the problem-solving piece. And those six, when you put them together by adulthood, are a very powerful suite of mind tools to help us with self-control and to maximize our future over just the moment.
And the thing about this construct is they develop kind of sequentially. It's almost like it's in your, if your prefrontal cortex, kind of from the middle of your head out towards your, the front of your brain, and they build upon each other. So those with ADHD, if they're not developing on time or at that level, each level kind of has an impact on the next level as the brain matures.
Right.
Is that right?
Yes. And so they're going to be 30 to 40% behind in each of these levels. Now, that begins to help us understand things. We already said, one, why do people with ADHD talk out loud more than others? Because they're delayed in internalizing their language. Why do they have to touch everything in sight? Why do they drift into more of the manual professions? Because it's easier for them to drop down to the stage of manual play with information than it is to manipulate that information mentally. So they'll actually be better off if problems can be made manual in nature rather than mental in nature. This also helps to explain why they often act without regard to hindsight and foresight. They seem to live in the now. All that seems to control them is what's happening now, and they don't seem to act with regard to their past and what it would do to inform them, and therefore with regard to their future. They seem to be preoccupied with maximizing the moment rather than maximizing what's coming next. And, you know, that can be an exciting and, as you said, dramatic way to live, but it can also be a very costly way to live. And you can wind up losing a lot of relationships and jobs as a result of this living in the now rather than living for the later, which is what they struggle to do.
This is, again, this is all fascinating. You know, at the you're talking about the mental play. It's funny because I've coached a few people that were white-collar jobs, and they needed to write some things. And the concept is they liked Word, or before computers were around, they would write the stuff out, and then they'd have ideas. And what they would do is externalize them and then order them sequentially so that they could actually organize the flow of their presentation or what they were trying to say, which really makes a lot of sense because they're trying to externalize it as much as they can so they can manipulate it, because they struggle with doing that in their mind as somebody who doesn't, which, again, goes back, and the model really makes a lot of sense.
Yes, it does. Now, what's new in the latest book?
These are the six things I talked about
in my last book. But what's new in the latest book is that I now take these six executive abilities, and I view this as level one. This is the executive level of the brain. So we had the automatic level, and then we have this newer evolved executive level. Now, what I've tried to do more recently in my theoretical work is begin to connect this up with how we act in everyday life. How would we see this all playing out? Because these six mind tools are mental. You can't see them. The person knows that they're doing them, but other people can't witness them. They're actually, you should think of them as instruments. They're a means to an end, but they're not the end in themselves. And so what I've been working on is, what is the end of executive functioning? Why do we have these six mind tools? What were they meant to do? And so very briefly, let me just walk you through these next stages, or I think of them as levels of our daily life. So we've got these mental abilities. Now, how are we going to, first of all, see these things play out in life? We're going to see them in daily self-reliance, the ability to care for yourself, to become a self-determined, self-controlled individual who doesn't need other people as much, and I mean that in a good way, who is not dependent on other people, but who is able to organize their life, manage their time, solve their own problems, get to their goals, and become a fully functioning, independent, self-reliant person. Mm-hmm. Now, psychologists refer to this level of our life as adaptive functioning. It's the ability to adapt on a day-to-day level and to care for ourselves. And it doesn't include, I mean, it includes such simple things as dressing yourself and bathing yourself and feeding yourself, but it also involves even longer-term things, like being less influenced by other people who don't have your interests at heart, being less gullible, less persuaded by people around you, being able to think for yourself, determine your own course of action, set your own goals and get to them. So daily adaptive functioning is one of the reasons we have these six executive abilities. So we begin to develop independence from others, self-defense, if you will, from others, and then self-determination. So that's level two in our executive model. Level one are the mental abilities. Level two is daily adaptive behavior and self-reliance. Then we get to the next level, level three, and that is where we see the executive abilities being used for social purposes. Because after all, the frontal lobe, the executive brain, evolved for its social purposes. It didn't evolve to play chess or to do, you know, digits fan backward, although we can use it for that. It evolved for a social purpose. And the first social purpose, beyond becoming independent and self-reliant, is reciprocity. We begin to engage in trading with other people. We share. We take turns. We give up things that we have to get things that other people have. Or we loan them things, but we expect to be treated similarly. We expect promises to be kept, debts to be repaid. We do this all day long. This is the beginning of economics, of the huge marketplace that we all live in and go about our daily lives, whether it's going into Walmart and buying something and giving money to get something, whether it's simply trading something with your neighbor that you have that he wants, whether it's social etiquette and holding the door open for people but expecting them to do likewise. All of our social lives are filled with what psychologists call social exchange, reciprocity, tit for tat, give and take.
Yep.
And we now realize that the executive brain evolved for this purpose.
Wait,
people live in groups.
You had said something in the presentation, if I remember it correctly. I mean, I think you were saying, like, language is actually developed so you can manipulate others.
Yes. But both in a good and a bad way. I can use language to persuade you to my way of thinking.
Yep.
But I can also use language to teach you things you don't know, like teachers do in school, and that's to your advantage. So language is a two-edged sword. We can use it to manipulate other people. Just think of all the marketing and ads, like the Super Bowl ads that were on earlier. You know, those are designed to manipulate you to the marketer's own ends.
It goes back to what
you
said.
But we also can talk to ourselves to counteract it.
It's all for social purposes. So I tell you what, we need to run to their next break real quickly. Again, your book is going to be out relatively soon on executive function, and if they need to get a copy of that, they can just go to russellbarkley.com. Or the local
RussellBarkley.org, right, RussellBarkley.org or Guilford.com.
Or Guilford.com. And with that, we'll be right back.
You're listening to Attention Talk Radio. We'll return in a moment. Your life, your world, your choice. This is Attention Talk Radio.
Make every moment count with Time Timer, a sensitive solution for ADHD time management. It shows how much time is left using a bright red disc that gets smaller as time passes. To place an order for a Time Timer, all you have to remember is TimeTimer.com.
Experience the difference with a top-notch ADHD coach. Find one at the ADD Coach Academy, the only comprehensive ADHD coach training program accredited by the International Coach Federation. Go to addca.com and click on Find a Coach.
Do you have something those with ADHD need? Advertise on Attention Talk Radio. We are a narrowcast, internet-based radio show targeting those with or impacted by ADHD. To learn more about advertising opportunities, email attention at attentiontalkradio.com.
And now, back to Attention Talk Radio.
Welcome back, everybody, to this edition of Attention Talk Radio. We've got Dr. Russell Barkley, and we're talking about executive functioning. Dr. Barkley, we've got a lot to cover. I don't know if we're going to get to all of it because we've got about 13 minutes left. But there's a few things I want to talk about real quickly. But there's one thing I just want to kind of pause. I think it might be a good time. Is in the presentation, I remember you talking about you had a picture of the brain, and you had the backside was knowledge, and the front side, the prefrontal cortex, was really a lot about performance. And in coaching those with ADHD, many of them have a insatiable appetite for learning. They just love to gain the knowledge, but they struggle in the performance of the execution of it. And it's interesting because the way you've laid this out, it kind of makes some sense. And when coaching those with ADHD, a lot of times we'll try to go find a template or a place to start that can kind of give them a pathway as which to see, like mental play outside, on how to kind of get to where they're going because they struggle in the absence of that. Could you speak real briefly on that and then we'll move on?
I'd love to, Jeff. Let me just finish up that last stage of that last model before we go on because I'm afraid our listeners are going to call you and say, well, what happened to that final stage? Well, the final stage of executive functioning is the ability to work in groups with other people. What I call the cooperative stage of executive functioning. It's different than trading. It's different than tit for tat, or I'll give you this if you give me that. This is where you and I work together as a team to accomplish a goal that none of us can do alone. And that, as you know, that is very important to daily human life because a lot of our work, a lot of our goals involve working as a group or a team with other people. Now, the end of this story is that when people have executive deficits, whether it's ADHD or frontal lobe injury, we can expect to see all of these levels beginning to suffer. The first level we talked about, the executive mental level. The second level, daily independence from other people, self-determination. The third level, the ability to engage in sharing, trading, turn-taking, social etiquette, and so on. And then finally, the fourth level, which is the ability to act in groups to accomplish a concerted goal, if you will, using concerted effort that you can't do alone. All of those are in jeopardy when the executive brain begins to suffer, as it does in ADHD. So I think that paints a much brighter or broader picture, rather, of why we see so many impairments associated with ADHD. Adult ADHD is the most impairing disorder we treat in outpatient mental health clinics. It's more impairing than anxiety disorders, than depression, than learning disabilities, than mild autism. This is a very serious disorder, but now you can see why it's interfering with one of the most important mental abilities. Now, the point that I think you're making that I talked about in my workshop is very important, and that is to think about the brain as two halves. The back half is the knowledge brain. It's where we acquire information. But that information doesn't do us any good unless it can be transferred to the front part of the brain, which is the performance brain, the doing brain. So we've got a knowing brain and a doing brain. And it's in the executive doing brain where what we know gets down to what we do. It's where the rubber meets the road, so to speak, in our life. Because you can be a very smart person and you can do stupid things. You've got to be able to use what you know in your daily life with other people in order to maximize its effectiveness for your life. And I think that really helps people understand that people with ADHD aren't stupid. They know what other people know. They can be very bright, very intelligent individuals, but it doesn't translate into how they act so that you don't see it in their daily life. They're not able to use the knowledge that they have in order to be more socially and occupationally effective in their life. So I think that's a very important concept for them.
And it's funny because many that I've coached, they're exceptionally bright and they do very, very well in school, some of them, but they struggle in the school of hard knocks. That's the execution of it. They get all the knowledge, but when they go out and they try to apply it again, now you're in the school of hard knocks, and that's many times where they struggle with some of that stuff. Again, this whole construct, it kind of makes some sense. I can understand why things are as a result of it. They do very well at regular school getting knowledge, but the school of hard knocks is one that's more difficult for them.
Yeah, it's getting things done in the real world.
Yep.
Now, the beauty of this new executive view of ADHD is that the executive model tells you that there are six things you have to do to deal with any executive disorder, with any performance disorder that we're talking about here. And you'll understand them as I go through them because they link up with each of the components we've talked about. Number one, you have got to stop relying on internal memory, on working memory, which is part of this visual imagery self-speech system.
Yep.
Yours isn't very good. You can't hold things in mind. So you've got to find ways to externalize, is the word you used, externalize information, whether it's writing it down, whether it's sticky notes, whether it's reminders. The point is external information guides you better than mental information. So learn that and use that to your advantage.
Mm-hmm.
The second thing is that the executive system is where we get our sense of time and time management. And therefore, you're going to need to make time physical because you don't have this mental clock that functions as well as other people that allows you to manage yourself relative to time the way they do. And we didn't go into all of the reasons why that's the case, but just take my word for it. The executive system is where your ability to understand time and use it to guide your behavior is located. So you're going to need to become more dependent on external timing devices, whether it's clocks, counters, whether it's the timing timer that was one of the ads at the commercial break, whether it's the watch minder or any of these other devices. You need to make time physical and make it real because your mental clock is a bit distorted or dysfunctional. Now, the third thing that people have to do is they have to make motivation external. People with ADHD have trouble with self-motivation, and it has to do with that emotional executive component. And again, we don't have time to explain why, but if you can't manage your emotions, you can't manage your motivation either.
Yep.
And therefore, people with ADHD need to arrange for external consequences to occur around them more often than other people do, whether it's breaking their work down into small chunks and, you know, arranging for a little treat like an espresso or a Starbucks or a latte or,
yep,
you know, a piece of candy or something. But you've got to break your work into smaller chunks, and then you've got to fill in with these artificial rewards and consequences. You can,
yep,
also do it by making yourself accountable to other people more often, like using an ADHD coach,
yep,
to check in with you on a daily or every so often basis. That's the kind of external accountability I'm talking about.
Yep.
You need external consequences more than others. Number four, because the executive system is the ability to anticipate the future and prepare for it, they can't do that very well. So we tell people to break the future into pieces and get,
mm-hmm,
a piece done a day. Don't worry about the longer goal. Don't worry about the larger project. That can,
yep,
seem overwhelming when you think about it in its totality.
Yep.
Instead, break it down into tiny little pieces that are much more manageable, that can be easily done within the day. And then you'll get a piece done a day. And, you know, sort of step by step, brick by brick, you'll build,
yep,
the bridge toward the future goal. But if all you do is think about the goal itself, you're not going to get there.
Yep.
You got to build the bridge a brick at a time. And so that's why I tell people, break your projects down into very tiny units that don't take very long. You can get a lot of those done, feel a lot more success without worrying about the goal that you're going for. That will come in due time if you do the little steps. Now, the next thing that you have to be able to do is to try to make problems manual. We talked about this early, because,
yep,
you can't do mental problem solving as well as others. See if you can break the problem down into pieces and do them with your hands, or put them in a computer, or put them in a Word file, or write them,
yep,
down on file cards. You know, I remember when I went to the furniture store, and the first thing they did was they got out a miniature little piece of graph paper with,
yes,
magnets on it, little tiny pieces of furniture, and we started,
yep,
moving those around,
yep,
rather than trying to do it in our mind. Very good thing to do. And then I think the last thing to do is to understand that this executive ability that we have has a limited fuel tank, a limited pool of energy. And it can be exhausted very quickly in people with ADHD. So you have to learn to refuel the tank a lot more often than other people do. And there are various ways of refueling this executive fuel tank. It, by the way, helps people understand why, when they have to work for so long, that they're exhausted. They're,
yep,
mentally shot. And that's because you're sort of exhausting your executive fuel system. So how do we refuel? Well, there's lots of things. One, regular routine exercise helps to restore and refuel our,
yep,
self-control fuel tank. Also, meditation can help as well. In addition to that, arranging for small rewards can help you.
Yep.
Thinking positive, giving yourself a pep talk before you start into a project can also help to fill up the fuel tank a little bit. Visualize the goals and the rewards you're going to get when you get there. That can help you as well. And finally, drink glucose-containing substances like lemonade, sports drinks. When you've got hard work to do, like you're taking exams or you're working on a very difficult project at work, and you need to use your executive system, keep some sugar-containing liquids nearby and sip on them. Lemonade is the one most often used, because it turns out that the frontal lobe, the executive brain, the fuel tank it runs on is blood glucose. And you got to keep a lot of glucose up in that frontal lobe if you're going to be using it as often as we try to do. Do those six things, and you'll be doing a lot to help your executive brain.
And all this makes a lot of sense in hindsight based off of some of the things that we kind of do in coaching, which is fascinating. Dr. Barkley, we've talked an awful lot about today, and we really didn't really touch on attention. It was all about self-regulation.
Yes.
And if we're focused now, it's really a self-regulation issue. It's really not an attention issue. That changes everything and changes all the assessments to a certain extent, right, and the treatments.
Yeah, I think you can think of ADD or ADHD, forget the A, it's EFDD. The attention problems that people have are the direct result of these executive deficits. So it would be more accurate to say that ADHD is executive function deficit disorder, which can lead to these kinds of attention problems,
uh-huh,
disorganization, forgetfulness. But the root of the problem is not attention. These people pay attention to the now just fine. What they're not paying attention to is the future, and that's the executive aspect of our life, and that's why ADHD really is EFDD.
And what I say this all the time, what's obvious is a function of what we pay attention to, but also the reverse of it. If the obvious solution isn't working, you're paying attention to the wrong thing. And by shifting this, I'm excited because it explains a lot, and it seems to me that this can be so beneficial for those with ADHD, because if we've been paying attention to attention, and it's really self-regulation, then we're more apt to get to the heart and help really those people that are out there, because now we're paying attention to the right thing. And again, the reason I wanted to have you on was really to showcase this model for others to chew on and think about, because I think it's revolutionary. And from my perspective, just as an experience with a coach, there's so much this model makes sense of that was unclear before.
Well, I appreciate you saying so, and I hope your listeners find it useful to reframe ADHD from this executive perspective.
Is there anything else that you think that you'd like to speak to that we haven't covered that we have that will take 3 days for us to kind of cover? Or
Well, I think people need to understand that the most effective treatments are the ones that address these problems. Take the medications, the stimulants, for instance, or the non-stimulants for ADHD. What these drugs do is to boost these executive abilities, and that's why they are so useful at helping to manage the symptoms on a day-to-day basis. But they don't lead to any permanent changes, like diabetes, mm-hmm. like the insulin that the diabetic takes. It helps you that day, but if you stop taking it, you're going to go back to being the inattentive, executive deficient person you were previously. But it does help us understand what these medications really were doing in the brain and in the neuropsychology of brain functioning. The second thing I think people need to keep in mind is that this is the most treatable disorder in psychiatry. We have more treatments for ADHD than for any other disorder, and the treatments that we have are three times more effective than we have for anxiety disorders, than we have for depression, or than other difficulties. And I'm not talking just about the medications, though that's true for them too. I'm also talking about the psychological treatments that we have. We also have a wider variety of psychosocial treatments, like executive function training and coaching, for children and adults with ADHD that can help boost the effects of medication. So to me, although, you know, the downside of my model is that we're talking about a very impairing and pervasive disorder here, the upside of our science is that this is a highly treatable disorder. And the biggest problem we have is that most people don't know they have the disorder and aren't being properly treated for it.
Very well put. So my last question with you, Dr. Barkley, is this. If it's really EFDD and everybody's calling it ADHD, how do you get the name changed?
Well, I doubt that it will be changed. I know in DSM-5 it won't, but there's a very practical reason for that. It's not because science hasn't shown that
mm-hmm.
this isn't an executive disorder. It is. It's that the term ADHD appears in so many laws and regulations and rulings and protections, and in school, and in the Americans with Disabilities Act, and in the IDEA Education Act, Social Security Administration, that if you change the name of a disorder, those laws don't apply anymore to the people with the new name. And you can disenfranchise them from a lot of these hard-won protections and these civil liberties and these entitlements that they've won over the last 20 years. So we don't change names of disorders too quickly, because we know that there are legal, political, and just practical side effects for doing so, and we don't want to be too cavalier about that.
Well, it's interesting, because leading up to this, I thought, well, if you really have revolutionized the world and it really is more appropriate, how does that take place? And it seems to me that it takes decades for that to do. And you actually brought up some really good obstacles that make it kind of difficult to move forward because of some stuff that's in place right now.
Yes.
I will say this, that one of the reasons I wanted to have you on the show, Dr. Barkley, was to help educate the masses out there to, hey, download the show and take it to your doctor. Let them listen to it. We're not saying it's the right thing. I mean, I'm not saying it's the right thing or wrong thing. I'm encouraged by it. I think it really makes a lot of sense. And some of this is just getting the word out there to say, hey, listen to this way of paying attention to it. Does it make some sense to you? If so, maybe follow up on Dr. Barkley's theories and stuff in a little bit more detail to see if it makes a little bit more sense at a deeper level. So a lot of this was really just coming on, let you share this, Dr. Barkley. Let those out there that digest this, it makes a lot of sense, particularly if it can help you. So thank you so much for coming on the show. This has been very enlightening. In my own private little education, I might add, I enjoy it.
That's great. Thank you.
A reminder to everybody, you can learn more about Dr. Barkley by going to russellbarkley.org. On that page, you can get access to your books. You got a host of presentations, and I mean, there's a host of stuff of papers they can get off there, not just the new book, right?
Right.
Excellent. So that, thank you again, Dr. Barclay. Everybody, stay tuned next week for another exciting edition of Attention Talk Radio. Take care.